nice to be back. I miss all of you. So, beginnings. Mary pointed out in her beginning the journey that ends can be hard, that sometimes we just don't know how to end things, so we just end them. And I think we need some of that same sort of way around beginnings. See, it never fails when I'm trying to start something new, I'm reminded of the fact that beginnings are hard. I've always thought that's why the Old Testament starts in the beginning. It's right to the point. No flowery language or misunderstandings on that one. It just is. A beginning like that is a hard act to follow, though. Maybe that's why we express such anxiety at starting new projects ever since. It's like we'll never accomplish the creation of the universe in such simplistic terms. Our beginnings are much more complicated, with the baggage of history weighing them down. I don't mean all this literally, that somehow we're all trying to out-create the Creator just never seem to quite get it right, and now feel frustrated as a result. But for me, it does often feel like taking on a new project or task or trying to make some change in my life feels like I'm trying to save the world. Maybe it's my line of work. But I don't think it's just that. Because I'm not the only one who expresses these same sort of feelings around beginnings. And I know people in a variety of different occupations. And it even comes up around some of the more mundane details in my life. Maybe it's about avoiding the work we know it's going to be. Or all of the things that we have to choose to put down to take up this new thing. It's almost as if in order for us to take up a new project, we need to first put something else down or choose to never pick something else up. It's like a game of this or that in our everyday lives, where only one choice is possible. Everything from our careers to the things we choose to do with our time. Do I do the dishes or finish study? Do I call my grandma since I've been putting it off forever? Or do I go out for a beer with my friends? Should I be a doctor or a firefighter? And then there are all those questions of doubt. What if I make the wrong decision? What if it doesn't work out? What if it's a lot more work than I thought it was at the start? What if? What if? What if? In some ways, it reminds me of the Choose Your Own Adventure books that I would read in elementary school. The books were more of a game than what you would call actual literature. The goal was to make all the right choices so that you could safely navigate your way to the end of the book. The book usually opened with a few pages of narration, giving you a setting and offering you two choices. Do you go through door number one or door two? Do you take the path to the left or the right? Each choice would give you a corresponding page to turn to, telling you what happened next. If you didn't make a choice, the story didn't progress. You just paused there until you finally got up the nerve to choose between page 78 or 25. And that choice decided your fate. The difference between these books and life, though, is that life doesn't just pause if we don't make a choice. The story keeps going with us as characters in it, whether we like it or not. Whether or not we actually choose to undertake that new change in our life or project, life goes on. And not all situations we encounter even provide us with a choice. We can't stop time, and the days will continue to come and go regardless of how we feel about it. And then there's the situations that happen so fast that we have little time to contemplate the outcomes of our actions, or situations that require us to fulfill a sense of duty or calling because we feel it's the right thing to do. Suddenly, just trying to make a decision about what to do feels like a heroic feat in itself. And still, after all of this processing and thinking and intellectualizing, we haven't even done anything. Or at least, that's the situation I find myself in often. So, earlier I shared with you a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, which is part of a larger collection of Hindu scriptures called the Mahabharata. I probably butchered that, I always do. I think it would be helpful for me to take some time and put this reading into its larger context. The Gita opens soon after the death of a king who had no sons to inherit his throne. It didn't take long for two cousins who both had legitimate claims to the rulership to start to feud. They caused a division in the family, and soon everyone chose between the two sides. This feuding went on for a while, and finally, after trying to find different ways to settle it, the two cousins played a game of dice. The first round goes, and the first cousin wins. And the second round, the second cousin wins. And they keep doing this until finally there's no clear winner. So they're thinking, how do we deal with this? So they devise a plan that the first cousin will take his family and they will rule the kingdom for 12 years. The second cousin will, during that 12-year period, go into the wilderness with his family. Then, after the end of that 12-year period, the two families will switch, and so on, thus sharing the rulership of the kingdom and ending the dispute. Or so they thought. However, at the end of the first 12-year period, the cousin who had been ruling didn't want to give up the throne. Can't imagine why he would. I mean, being king sounds like a pretty good gig to me. So they try again to, how can we solve this dispute? What will bring us together? And they can't find anything. And it's decided the only way to settle this dispute, is to go into battle. As the battle is about to start, one of the participants, Arjuna, who had been with the side of the family in the wilderness, feels conflicted about having to fight his own family members, even if they didn't keep their word. But Arjuna also knows that if he doesn't fight, he will be disgraced and banished. This is because he's of the warrior class. And in his society at the time, the rules dictated that he is obligated to fight when called upon. In this moment of internal conflict, when Arjuna is trying to figure out what to do, the Lord Krishna comes to him in a vision. Krishna, when Arjuna expresses his anxiety to Lord Krishna, Krishna begins to lecture him, telling him, your concern should be with action, never with action's fruits. These should never motivate you, nor attachment to non-action. Not even for a moment does something exist without acting. Even against one's will, one acts by the nature-born qualities. This world is bound by action, so act without attachment to your deeds. In order to maintain the world, your obligation is to act. In the end, after Krishna had finished lecturing, which takes up the majority of the text, Arjuna realizes his duty and responsibility to fight. He's in this situation where there is no good outcome. There's not a good choice that he can make. And so he falls back on doing the one thing that he feels that he must do, the thing that he is obligated to do. and he fights. For me, the core teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is not about our duty to go into physical battle to right wrongs because our social location says we must. I think this is a teaching that spoke more to a particular time and place. For me, this text, though, speaks about the importance of choosing to be an active participant in the world instead of simply letting life slip by. It's about learning to set aside all of your anxieties about starting something new or taking on a new project and allowing your core values to guide your actions so that you need not be as concerned with the actual outcomes, but instead focus on being decisive and firm in our commitments in a way that honors our obligations, as well as holds central the things we value. When this becomes the way we move in the world, we become able to make decisions and act in a positive way without even stopping to think about what we are doing. If instead we allow ourselves, though, to become mesmerized by the options available, we often abstain from acting, even when the obvious solution has presented itself. So, about 10 years ago, when I was just turned 18, I was a senior in high school. There was a night where I was feeling particularly frustrated with my sisters and all the friends that they had at our house. And eventually it reached a point where I just said, I need to get out of here. I'm going to take a walk. So I put on my shoes and headed out the front door. The sun had just begun to set, and I wasn't sure exactly where I was going, but I just felt that I needed to get away. I made my way to the main road where I lived, and as I started to walk towards town, I suddenly found myself in the dark of night. As my eyes adjusted, I noticed something in the road ahead of me. At first, I thought it was possibly a deer that someone had hit. That was common on this stretch of highway, and especially at night. As I got closer, though, I started to second guess my initial judgment. Is that a person? I thought out loud. I broke into a jog, and as I approached, my fear was confirmed. It was a man laying in the middle of the road. He was soaking wet. I shook him, and he didn't respond. I checked his pulse. Thank God he's still alive, I said as I felt the beating in his neck. I shook him again, and this time he roused. I asked the man if he could move. Yes, he belligerently said. Good, let's get you out of the road. No, leave me here. I just want to die. I'm not going to just leave you here, I snapped back. Why not? Because that's not the sort of person I am. I couldn't live with myself if I just left you here like that. Finally, after some persistence on my part, the man agreed to move out of the road. It was a struggle to get him up, and he was obviously intoxicated. Together, I staggered with him to a gravel pull-off that was not far away. I sat him down and asked his name. David, he responded. I'm Zach. It's nice to meet you, David. What were you doing in the middle of the road? I just want to die. Why would you want that? I'm just tired of it all. Then David began to get worked up. I had him take some deep breaths with me. This seemed to calm him down. At this point, I checked my cell phone. There wasn't a signal, and I didn't know what to do next. I couldn't just leave David here. I was afraid he'd end up back in the road. I decided to wait until a car came by I could flag down for help. As I sat there waiting, David began to cry. Then he looked at me and asked, are you an angel? No, I'm not an angel, I responded. But you came out of nowhere and saved me. I just happened to be walking by, luckily for you. We continued to talk, but most of our conversation was incoherent. When I finally saw headlights coming our way, I got excited. As the car approached, I pulled my cell phone out of my pocket and began waving it in the air, hoping that the light might attract the driver's attention. A large black truck stopped. I began explaining what was going on to the driver and asked if they could drive up the road and call for help or give us a ride. Instead of helping, the driver just told me, "Let him die," rolled up his window, and drove off. The comment left me feeling pretty pissed off, I'll be honest. I spent the next few minutes yelling obscenities into the night after the truck, and somehow through all of this, David seemed fairly unaware of what had even transpired. Eventually, another car came and stopped and agreed that they would go and call 911. A cop car arrived shortly thereafter and the police said that they would take it from there. The two police officers put David in the back of their car, and I continued walking. When I finally got cell service, I called a friend who came and picked me up. That night, I had no idea what was in store for me when I left my house, and I had no experience dealing with a situation like that. It would have been easy for me to allow an anxiety to move over me and to begin to panic. But I didn't. And I didn't let my lack of experience stop me from being of help. The choice was there, right in front of me. And I had to do something. And so I just did what I felt was right. I could have been like the guy in the truck who told me to let David die. I could have just kept walking. But in that moment, that thought didn't even cross my mind. Somehow I felt obligated towards this man. Like something in the core of me just knew it was the right thing to do. And I did it. Looking back, I think I could have handled some aspects a little bit better. I didn't take any precautions for my own safety. What if the guy had gone berserk or had had a weapon? But these thoughts didn't even cross my mind. The situation presented itself, and I felt called to it. To this day, I still believe that if I had chosen to do nothing that night and just walked away instead of inconveniencing myself, David would have been killed. You can only lay in the middle of a road at night for so long before someone runs you over, even if it is in the middle of nowhere. I don't know what happened to David after that night, but I hope that somehow me being there when I was and doing what I felt called to do has made a positive difference in his life. I don't share this story to make it seem like this is always the sort of level-headedness I exhibit in chaotic situations. I share it because it demonstrates the way in which allowing ourselves to set aside all of our anxiety about doing something or doing it the right way, the perfect way, and just doing something, doing the thing we feel right, how that can make a difference. Sure. The sort of decision-making required in the story I've just shared with you and that of the Bhagavad Gita isn't the same level of decision-making we are likely to encounter in our daily lives. Thankfully, and I mean thankfully, most of us will not have to act out a modern version of the Good Samaritan story. And we probably aren't all going to have to find ourselves in a situation where we have to choose between being disgraced or fighting our own family to the death. Fortunately for us, these situations don't arise too frequently. Still, both of these stories have a way of illustrating how choosing to be an active participant in the world and choosing to do what is right because you feel called to do it can make a difference. It can correct a wrong or even save a life. We just have to get over our anxiety about starting new things or new ways of being in the world, and instead respond to the situation at hand in the best way we know how. When we learn to act in this manner, others will follow. It's like Lord Krishna said to Arjuna, "Whatever the best leader does, the rank and file will also do. Everyone will fall in behind such a standard a leader sets." So next time you find yourself in that situation where you have to choose between starting something new or making a major change in your life, or you decide that you want to save the world, first, remember, don't try to do it all at once. Because the reality is that us as individuals can't do everything. It's going to take a lot of us. If we think that we can do it all, we're setting ourselves up for failure and disappointment, only helping to reinforce that anxiety around beginnings. Instead, learn to let your values guide what you do and choose to do what you feel is right when the choice presents itself. In learning to act this way in our daily lives, when the stakes aren't as high, we can then prepare ourselves to act in this way when it really matters. In doing this, we become the leader, the ones who set the standard of what it means to be of service, a people who act from a place disconnected from receiving praise or glory, but act rather because it's the right thing to do. This sort of way of being has to start somewhere. Why can't it start right here with us? May we have the courage. Amen. And blessed be.